standing in the wake of devastation. Cataclysm raining down, insides crying, save me now. You were there, impossibly alone.
Hello everyone, welcome to Shakya.com presents Movie Night. My name is Rudy Obias, and joining me is
Harry Nemera.
And so this week, the big blockbuster movie of the summer, I think it's going to be the next blockbuster for the next 2 weeks, actually. It's the new film from Michael Bay, and the third film in the Transformers franchise, Transformers Dark of the Moon. Now, the last film, which came out in 2002, was the highest non-3D grossing film of the year. It actually grossed something like $600 million plus, just at worldwide box office theatrically. The number one grossing movie of that year was Avatar, obviously, getting $2 billion worldwide. And so this year, stepping it up a little bit more, that Transformers 3 is in 3D and actually uses that same 3D technology used in Avatar. And I think the difference is that that movie, the second Transformers movie was really high grossing, but got a really low critical response. I'm curious to hear, Perry, what are your thoughts on Transformers Dark of the Moon? Do you think it's going to continue that tradition of getting low critical response and a high, ridiculously high box office?
Without a doubt. I don't think it's going to be as high as Revenge of the Fallen, because I'd like to hope that people are a little smarter this time around and might not jump on it like they did last year. But
even with the 3D tag on it?
Even with the 3D, I mean, doesn't recent trends show that maybe 3D isn't earning as much more as it used to anymore? Like, I feel like the 3D for a few recent films has been a little under what the studios were expecting.
Yes, I would say so, definitely. I mean, especially for Green Lantern, but this was actually shot in 3D, and I think they're actually promoting like the Avatar technology and the 3D aspect of that.
I mean, personally, I'd advise against seeing this in 3D. I mean, not like there's much story here to begin with, so why would you want to take away from what there is by adding that extra gimmick, which doesn't even do much for it anyway?
I thought the 3D was actually pretty okay. I mean, it wasn't as bad as it was in Green Lantern. And surprisingly, I was actually surprised that the image wasn't dark. That's one of the things I hate about 3D is how dark the image is. And I was surprised that it wasn't very dark at all. It still popped on screen, which I was very surprised about.
I have a hard time seeing anything popping because I'm so wrapped up in the fact that I've yet to see 3D anywhere that's enhanced a story.
That's definitely true.
I mean, it's ultimately just some gimmick that we're paying extra money for. I mean, I'd much rather pay the extra money to, you know, fly to Orlando and go on one of those cool rides in Universal than pay an extra, I mean, what is it, you know, $5 to $8 to see a 3D movie. It just doesn't enhance the experience any, like, at all. And ultimately, all that I got, the only extra thing seeing Transformers in 3D got me was a headache. And even a little nauseous, too.
I, too, received a headache, not from the 3D, but just from the bombastic nature of the last hour and a half of the film, 45 minutes of the film. But before we get to that aspect of the movie, I mean, what did you think of, I guess, the first half of Transformers? I mean, it does feel like it's two separate films. I mean, I thought that it... I felt that first half was really hard in establishing A, story, B, character, and C, tone.
I know exactly where you're dividing it into two movies, and I guess ultimately I would divide that first half into another half, and the beginning being that opening sequence where we get the breakdown of what is actually going on here in terms of the Transformers having an effect on why the U.S. went to the moon in the first place. And then the reintroduction to Sam Witwicky and where he's at now. And both of those, I thought, worked pretty well. I mean, I definitely got a good sense of the beginning of the story. And, you know, it's ultimately Shia LaBeouf back in fighting form yet again. He's quick talking. He's kind of funny. And he's got great timing. And also, Michael Bay just kept the pace going very well in the beginning. So everything moved along fast, which made it a lot more digestible. But once we got into the meat of the situation beyond just this novelty that, you know, the Transformers actually had an effect on our history, that's where it started to lose me, because it started to, you know, fray in a million different directions.
Yes, I do agree that this movie starts off really well, I thought, like actually showing this amazing battle scene on Cybertron. And it's the first time that we've ever seen Cybertron, and the fight that we've just, this battle and war we've been hearing about in two movies, we actually get to see it here. And I actually did like the way they played around and rewriting history. And I thought that was a very clever use of rewriting history. I mean, we saw it in Inglourious Basterds, and that got a lot of criticism. But, and in Watchmen, actually, I think what Watchmen does wrong with rewriting history, Transformers 3 actually gets right, in my opinion. And so I do agree that that opening sequence is great. It does really fall apart when they introduce all these like minor characters. I don't feel the humor was quite there that they were looking for. I'm a unapologetic Michael Bay fan, but the older I get, I just can't seem to reconcile his humor. You know, it's very juvenile and just based on racial stereotypes. And I just don't find that funny anymore, because I'm not a 14-year-old boy anymore, I guess.
The breaking point for me, I think, has happened recently with going to film school myself and having to make movies myself and seeing how hard it is to even raise just a couple thousand dollars to make something. And he's having so much money poured into absolute garbage. He's just wasting all of his resources when there's so many talented people out there desperately needing them to make something that could be really fantastic.
So that first half of the film, the way it goes, it really seems needless, because in the second half of the film, it totally doesn't pay off anything that happened in that first hour and a half, arguably.
To me, the breaking point there happens when Shia LaBeouf's character finishes his job hunt and he's in John Malkovich's office and he's hired as a worker. From that point on, everything is just completely nonsensical.
Yeah, I mean, like, what was the actual point of that long job search? You know, I mean, it really never pays off. It never seemed to be like a job that he got to help the Autobots win this war.
What exactly was the point of John Malkovich's character, period? I mean, did I miss something?
Yeah, or because he's introduced a little bit, and maybe you could just see it as a cameo, but he does show up every now and then, and then we just leave him kind of fetishizing over Bumblebee, which I kind of felt was a little funny, but ultimately had no payoff or anything.
And it was totally inconsistent with the character they had established for him beforehand.
Yeah, and like now that he's just kind of goofy. I mean, albeit that he did have an affection for that color yellow, because I do recall him loving that color so much that whenever they had like red, he'd get disgusted, and then they show yellow and he'd love it. So I felt that that was pretty consistent, but then that really did nothing. And that's how I felt a lot of that first half of the film played out, like nothing. Like Ken Jeong is in this movie that I didn't know he was in the movie, and then he showed up, and then he does this weird, spastic, like borderline almost homosexual type of thing, and it gets somewhat of a laugh, and then I completely forget about him until the closing credits when it says Ken Jeong. I'm like, oh, he was in this movie. And then we spend 20 minutes with him, and then I don't remember him at all.
I don't even quite understand why he was in the movie to begin with. Like, what was the point of his character? I know he was being manipulated by the Decepticons, but I mean, to what end?
Yeah. And even a sequence where you would kind of get excited about, oh, now the Decepticons are going to kill all the humans that help them out, they really never play that off at all. It kind of goes into like this little horror type film, and then that's it. Very disappointing. I'm going to say, like, although I really did not like the middle portion of this film, namely in that second act, which is just completely wasted, I did like that last hour of the movie where all it is that they're in the city of Chicago and it's just robots and robots fighting. I like that quite a bit.
I liked some of it quite a bit. I did not like the fact that it ultimately repeated over and over and over and over. It was like one robot battle after another. We watched, you know, Tyrese's character and his whole crew. They were all sliding down buildings, and it was cool the first time, but then they slowed down about four more. And then when Josh Duhamel's character and his team jumps into the scene of the action into Chicago from the planes, and you know, they spread their wings and do that gliding thing down, that was awesome. But then they did it again. Why did everything have to be repeated over and over? I ultimately got bored of it.
Because it was awesome and we need more of it. I mean, I wasn't bored with that last half at all. I just said keep it coming more and more and more. Did you see Battle Los Angeles this past year?
I did, yes.
There are similarities between the two movies, because namely just those urban combat scenes, where I didn't like Battle Los Angeles at all. I thought it was a complete failure. I think this succeeds because the action to me seemed fluid. Like, it did seem like there were that it felt somewhat organic the way the battle went from here to here to here, that Michael Bay does have this sense of space, and then I never really got lost in how anything got really frenetic or bombastic. I never really got a sense of it, that I was getting lost. And so for that, I definitely appreciated the last hour of the film. I would say see the movie. If you go see the movie, stay for the first 15 minutes, leave, and then come back like probably an hour later to see the last action scene.
You know, if that was the case, I might have had the head to properly enjoy that last action scene. Because, I mean, even before all of that action starts, Michael Bay's camera is so incredibly mobile and just never sits still in the least that I was so dizzy and disoriented by the end that I was having a hard time sitting still for that reason. Between the mobility of the camera, just in terms of simple one-on-one conversations, the mobility during the action scenes, which is absolutely incredibly wild, and then the 3D, it's just too much. It's too much to handle for that long, for 2.5 hours.
Yeah, it's like eating a lot of chocolate cake.
I wonder all day. Where you got that from.
The way I was watching the film, I thought of Terrence Malick's The Tree of Life, actually, that they're both kind of working as the same type of filmmaker, but on completely different extremes. Like, Terrence Malick is really slow-moving and more thoughtful, and Michael Bay is the complete opposite of that, just really fast, bombastic, and really doesn't have any thought of anything. It's just completely mindless. And for that, I appreciated it on that level of just turn off your brain type of movie, but it didn't need to be 2.5 hours long.
I mean, it's just examples of, you know, directors putting their stamps and their own type of like authenticity on their pieces. And I mean, anyone can ultimately do that, but they also need to think of an audience period. And there's just such a narrow amount of people that are going to fall right in line with exactly what they want in these things. And I mean, I appreciate the fact that people want ownership of their films, but ultimately they're meant to entertain a wider audience than just themselves. And in both, I mean, in this case, he just got too crazy with all of the CGI and the battles and completely neglected the story and the fact that it still needs character development. And not everybody is in this to just see robots battle for 2 hours. It's just not conducive to a wide audience.
Did you see Transformers 1 and 2?
Yes, I did.
And how did you feel about those movies?
I really enjoyed the first one. I thought the first one was just a great introductory piece. It had a really nice balance between the action. And I do like action. I don't want to say that, you know, I don't like any of this fun, crazy CGI type stuff, because I do. But that one had a great blend of the two. Then you get to Revenge of the Fallen, and the CGI just overtook it. It was all, I mean, fighting and explosions, and there was no story. So, like, none of these battles had any meaning to me at all. I mean, people would die, robots would blow up, and I mean, what was it to me except for the fact that I was just, you know, it's one more battle to get past until the movie's over. And I had that same feeling here. I mean, especially because of the relationships here. Like, they literally just plucked Megan Fox out and put this this model, Rosie Huntington Whiteley, I believe. Whiteley, yes. They just threw her right in, and he completely exploited her. Their relationship was so contrived. Every shot of her was looking up her skirt. It was just, there was nothing emotional to hold on to whatsoever here.
Yeah, I mean, he did the same thing with Megan Fox in those Transformers movies. But I think I'm going to give Transformers 3 a little bit of credit from Transformers 2, that at least the action in this seemed a little cohesive, seemed like it had thought put onto it. Other than, I mean, I do agree with you, the action in Transformers 2 was just abysmal and just absolutely horrible without any sense of what I guess what the audience would enjoy or even comprehend. This, the action here is a little comprehensible, and I did appreciate that a little bit. John Turturro in this film, not as crazy as he was in the last two films. I mean, although you can say that any one of these actors or characters in this are kind of interchangeable, really aren't really. I mean, I don't think Michael Bay is concerned with any human relationship at all. He's more concerned with machinery and technology than anything else, which is apparent in all of these Transformer films. Patrick Dempsey as this kind of nameless, cartoonish billionaire who is dead set against the Autobots winning, which I don't understand why he wanted the Autobots not to win, why he wanted, he was openly welcoming the slavery of humanity. I was thinking to myself, like, are you going to get like a tax credit or something if this happens? Are you just like, I never really understood like why he was doing this. Even though it seemed like they would turn on him at any minute because they have done it in the past.
I think it was a job that was inherited. Like, his father had that relationship with the Decepticons and then he had to take it over. But it makes no sense that he'd think he'd get anything out of helping them in the end.
Exactly. And that's what, I just couldn't wrap my head around that. Also, I thought it was a bit ironic when Megatron, destroyed the Abraham Lincoln statue and then sits in the chair. Because I'm thinking to myself, well, that guy liberated slaves, but you want to enslave people. That's kind of ironic. That I was like, wow, that's what are you going for here, Michael Bay? All right, well, anything else you want to talk about with Transformers Dark of the Moon?
I will say that as much as I disliked this movie, it definitely is, I'll admit it, it's a step up from Revenge of the Fallen, and probably the only part that actually managed to have a nice emotional impact was when Sam has to part with Bumblebee at a point. That felt very good, but then the repercussions of that are just so unrealistic that it kind of ruined it for me. But there are the slightest hints of some proper filmmaking here, and some of the visuals again are just spectacular. But you know, when you have something spectacular happening over and over again, ultimately it's not going to be as cool anymore. Save it for the right moments.
Yeah, this movie feels more like a reel to show off. Like, look what we could do with this technology, you know? Like, this is something that you would want to sell to investors instead of an actual movie. And I guess watching it as a reel, it's pretty impressive and cool, but Michael Bay has talent there, I think. He has a visual eye, and he has a good sense of movement with camera and what he shoots. I feel the way he composes a shot is very artistic, that he does this consistently throughout all of his films, that I don't think he just points at something and then just captures it. I really do think there's some thought and artistry put behind his work. As pretentious as that sounds, I do think Michael Bay is a really good director. I just want him to have a script, a good script, and a good producer to make this vision come alive. And he can't be the only one behind it, because he cannot be restrained at all. I would say, yes, go see Transformers, Dark of the Moon. Watch it for the first 20 minutes, leave, and then come back for the last hour. That would probably be the best way to enjoy this movie. Where can we find you online, Perry Nemiroff? Where can we find you online?
Ready for the laundry list? You could find me on Shakya.com, CinemaBlend.com, Movies.com, a little on ComingSoon.net, and you can also find me on Twitter. It's at P Nemiroff, N-E-M-I-R-O-F-F.
Well, you added the ComingSoon.net from last week.
Something I'm very excited about going live over there in the next week.
Oh, man. And you can find my work on Shakya.com, GordonandTheWhale.com, AutorCast.com, everything that is Rudy at RudyObias.com, and you can follow me on Twitter, Twitter.com/Rudy_Obias. That's RUDIE_OBIAS. And I guess on the next episode, nothing really big's coming out. Maybe Horrible Bosses it comes out on the 8th. So perhaps we're going to speak upon that. So let's close out this episode of Movie Night. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.